You know, for artists like this, for legacy artists, I think they are in a position where they can just drop the album. They don't need all that pre-hoorah, hoorah, and hype their content enough when their drops suffices. And this is evident that that's true.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Season 2.
Uh-huh.
Yo, Louis.
Y'all ready?
Just musically
Yo,
speaking.
Yo, Pedro. What's good?
Check. I'll let the music talk to ya. Like Lou and P. Pedro got that vision so your mind can see. Louis got them ideas, let them out, be free. We got the whole industry speaking musically. Season 2, every episode is popping with facts. You can get behind the scenes of the acts and tracks. All the drama in between, work it out and relax. We talk about the real shit and the wax on tracks.
So turn it up, light it up, AirPods and beats.
It's musically speaking.
Pedro, Louis and me.
Turn it up, light it up, AirPods and beats.
It's musically speaking.
Pedro, Louis and me. Let's get it. Ha ha ha, let's go. Ha ha, start the show.
Ha, yeah,
yeah.
I tell, I bless y'all.
Welcome everybody to another episode of Musically Speaking, the podcast. My name is Pedro.
And my name is Louis. What's good, everyone? Hope everyone's safe and doing well. How are you doing, brother?
I'm doing all right, man. How are you doing?
I'm good, coping, you know, just staying at home, working from home, you know, same old story. Everybody has the same old story, trying to cope. And I'm thinking we're going to be in this kind of state of mind for the rest of the year. I'm curious to see what the holidays are going to look like. This is what we have. This is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, we're looking at the 6 month.
6 months? Really? It's been that long? Wow, it's crazy.
At least in New York, I think it's in about, say, mid-March is when things really started to kind of shut down.
Yep, makes sense.
So the 6 month kind of anniversary, if you want to call it, of what it's been happening, of course, with the pandemic and what that looks like, you know. And obviously we are going through what would in this case be the third season of the pandemic. We went through spring, we went through summer, we figured out what that looks like. Now we're doing an untraditional fall, right?
Yeah.
The transition to fall. In many cases, school has started in a lot of places. And what that looks like is now it's different. Before it was finishing school for a lot of kids. Now it's how we start it like this.
Yeah.
But also just the idea of what is your traditional, like you said, fall season, which in this case usually means it's the last part of the year. People start thinking about the holidays, the transition into what is the future in terms of this case 2021 and what that looks like. But while all that is happening, while we're still in the middle of a pandemic, the clock still ticks. And that's one of the things I've been thinking about in my own world. And it hasn't been very traditional in any way, but we wanted to touch base on an album and an artist that, Louis, you and I, we both admire. And
oh, yeah.
We got an opportunity to listen to in detail, which is Nas and his latest album, King's Disease, yes, in reference to gout.
And that deserves a clap. So, well, not the gout, not the gout part.
But the gout doesn't deserve a clap, but the album release itself.
Yeah.
And, you know, what are your thoughts? I like the album. What do you think?
I love the album. Just to give you a synopsis of kind of where I'm going to go with it, to me, it is the follow-up to Illmatic. It brings me back to his storytelling. It brings me back to even in his lyricism on this album. He literally brings you back to, you know, the 80s, early 90s hip hop growing up, the things that we remember, like, you know, hitting White Castle after the club, you know, all those kind of things. It's back to vintage to me, Nas storytelling in a way that connects. And I think all his albums after Illmatic were, you know, kind of tread that a little bit, you know, gave you a little bit of that, was a little more commercial. He was testing waters, but I think this album, he kind of went back to that. And that's what I'm hearing in the streets too.
Yeah, I'm going to go in a little bit of a different direction. I think, in my opinion, his Stillmatic to me was kind of his, I would say, part two of Illmatic in terms of best album and best course of work. He did put out some good work after that. I think God's Son was really good. Life is Good was a really good album. Untitled, also known as NIGGR, which he tried to call it that. These are all good albums. I think what I like you said, what I like about this specific album is that he goes into storytelling into a little more in depth, but also it's a different Nas. You're talking about somebody who's in his 40s at this point, has much success. He's not talking about the streets so much as what is his life like. And that becomes all of us, as in a sense, who grew up in hip hop and are probably near his age at this point in time. You start thinking about your legacy versus what you used to do or who you used to be, right? Compared to maybe a younger artist, like, for example, let's say Pop Smoke or Roddy Ricch, who right now they're young and all they're going to talk about is what they see and what's right in front of them. And they don't have a past to really look or reflect upon. So that's how I saw this album, and I really liked it.
And you know, also for me, it's a breath of fresh air in terms of what I know as hip-hop, right? Hip-hop is lyricism. Hip-hop is dope-ass beats. It's, you know, being genuine, I think. And maybe because I'm in my 40s, maybe I relate a little more. I don't know if a 14, 15-year-old now would feel the same way about this album as I do. Probably not. But because hip-hop is in a different place now, this kind of brought me back to what I know hip-hop to be. And, you know, I don't know where we go with that in terms of this day and age and the audience that's out there now and whether or not he's touching new listeners, younger listeners, but he sure is, you know, touching those, his core audience, I would think.
Well, this is how I would compare it. I mean, if you think about the way rock has progressed over time, it was this music that was from young people to young people, kind of rebellious. And as those folks grew older, that music didn't really resonate with the younger audience that are now younger than the person who created rock and roll, right? So that music evolved and it became maybe adult contemporary or whatever. And then you had somebody else take that rock and roll to another level, whether it was heavy metal, whether it was glam rock, whether it was grunge, alternative. So it's kind of like those levels that you see in rock. I think hip hop is finally getting to a place where adult contemporary hip hop, there's nothing wrong with that. I think there's nothing wrong with hip hop artists reaching to a particular audience that can resonate with them. I'm pretty sure that someone who's middle class or went or got out of the hood or has been able to get past that point and have some success should be able to have music that relates to them. And hip hop should have that.
I just think there's maybe, I don't want to sound like an old fogey. I think there's a balance. Like, give an example, DaBaby, who just, you know, had a great performance on the VMAs, who's had some great success. I think, to me, he is kind of in the middle, right? He is a now day and age artist, but still a lyricist. And I think for hip hop heads, you know, we value the lyricism. We value the content of your songs, as opposed to just, you know, singing what you want over autotune, and you may not understand what it says, but you love the melody, and that's what trap music kind of, you know, has become, you know, just that type of style. While hip hop, you know, still lyricist based, you know, has that, it has to find a way back into the mainstream of hip hop today. And I think DaBaby is a good example of making that happen. And back to my point with Nas, you know, Nas is still, he's an old head. You know what I'm saying? He's still revered as, if not the, one of the greatest of all time, hip hop. And when, you know, icons like that come out with new music, we got to be careful about how it's received and who the audience is. And I don't know that Nas put a lot of emphasis or caring about that. And I think his previous albums did, with his features and you know, and I think the lack of going really back to what this is, to me, this is grassroots lyricism, grassroots storytelling, grassroots hip-hop, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it's a fine line in hip-hop because it's known as a young man's game, a young man's genre. And, you know, once you're labeled as some, I mean, anybody who could have more than a five-year career in hip-hop is considered a veteran, which is, in my opinion, kind of embarrassing. But that's just how it is. You know, hip hop is a now kind of movement. It's what's happening right now. And once you get past a certain point, you can't speak about the same things that you did even 5 years ago. And I think every adult has those moments. It might not be just 5 years, but I look like a fool trying to, resonate with somebody who's in their 20s, who hasn't lived at least a moment in time where the internet didn't encompass all their lives. So, getting to now the nitty gritty of the particular album, Hit Boy produced this album, and I'm familiar with his work, but I thought that the chemistry between Hit Boy and The Work was top notch, probably the best I've ever seen from him. What did you think of the production of the album?
Yeah, a lot of soul, a lot of use of horns, samples. Again, really reminiscent of that just soulful, New York City streets. I felt like when I listened to the tracks, I'm walking down, Queens Boulevard or in the BX. That's the feel that the music, let alone Nas's lyrics, but just the music alone and the hooks and the, the folks who jumped on to do collabs with him. I mean, I think like you said, the project all came together. And yeah, the music was dope, bro. The music was absolutely on fire.
Yeah, and according to not just us, but those who had and the ability to give the review the album and give it ratings, they were all pretty favorable. I want to touch upon some of our favorites of the album and kind of your thoughts, like you said, overall of the listening component to this album. I do recommend everybody hear it from start to finish. It's one of those albums that you need to...
13 tracks,
It's less than, I would say, 50 minutes of running time. So it's good, concise, compact, to the point. What were some of your favorites of the album?
Yeah, definitely my favorite of top favorite was Car 85. To me, it was very reminiscent of New York State of Mind on Illmatic. Him kind of really talking about, his life growing up in New York. Charlie Wilson was on the hook, which just added butter to a smooth, warm cornbread out the oven. It was just nice. The Car 85 is definitely my joint. Other notables for me was Replace Me, which featured Big Sean and Don Oliver, who to me just his hook was crazy, was infectious, and I think that's what made the song. I also had Till the War Was Won, which featured Lil Durk. I think Lil Durk's verse was dope as hell. I wish I would have heard a little more of him on that. Of course, the Ultra Black to me kind of summarized where we are today. I think Nas kind of brought it all back. Video is amazing. Definitely encourage folks to go check that out. And the only one track that I didn't like, well, I don't know. Let's hear what you like, and then we'll talk about anything that we were concerned about. So those are mine.
Yeah. I like slightly different tracks. My favorite, I think, at least right now, has to be 10 Points. That particular track, Nas really goes into detail about just how to navigate society and not worry so much about what everybody else is thinking, which in hip hop is something very difficult to promote. So I really like that track. I really enjoyed kind of the Firm reunion, full circle, except for Foxy Brown's verse. I thought it was lazy, but the other guys really step up. I mean, when you're working with a Nas, when you're working with a Jay-Z or an Eminem, you have to be at your best. And, The Firm, of course, known as AZ and Foxy Brown, who collaborated together in the Cormega in the past, they work very well together. I was surprised at how their chemistry still was on tact after all that time. So I really enjoyed those tracks. I did like Replace Me as well and Ultra Black. I thought those were really, really good songs. I enjoyed All Bad. People didn't like that song with Anderson .Paak doing the hook on that. I enjoyed All Bad. I don't know why, but I did like that song. And The Cure, of course, kind of summing up the album besides the bonus track, The Cure really kind of put it all kind of a bow on the albums. Those were kind of my favorites. But yeah, 10 Points and Full Circle were the songs that really kind of resonated with me there.
Yeah, good. I mean, 10 Points for me was his political kind of stamp on things. I mean, he talked about some pretty volatile things that are in media right now. So I thought, you know, those kind of things are vintage Nas. You know, he addresses those. But I actually had a very different take on Full Circle. You know, I thought the firm didn't do a good job, especially Foxy Brown. To me, her verse was just, to me, non-creative, almost like a snapshot back into, you know, late 80s, early 90s. And she's still rhyming in the same rhyme style. And that was my one takeaway from this, is that the firm, you know, AZ and Cormega, I just thought that, you know, how they attack and approach their verses, it just sounded like they were stuck in time, you know, while Nas finds a way to show in his lyricism and his delivery the growth, you know, his maturity over all these years. I just think these guys were kind of stuck where they were, same style, same delivery, nothing innovative. And I may be being really, really harsh, but I expected more when you haven't been heard from, you know, in X amount of years, and you have an opportunity to be alongside Nas and what can be potentially be a groundbreaking album, that you would be innovative in your delivery. And I didn't think they brought that.
I mean, that's a point that I didn't really think of it. I kind of saw this as like a throwback track in a way. And I don't think that they were trying to reinvent the wheel in terms of their style. They wanted to kind of make you kind of transport to you to like, what if the firm was still around, or what would it look like? That's kind of how I saw it.
I wouldn't buy the record then.
Well, no, I think it's first of all, The Firm was not a good album. I'm gonna be honest with you. You can't create a whole album based on that format that's gonna capture you, in a sense. It's very difficult to do that, and maintain it for, you know, a whole album, 45, 50, even an hour. Those are hard. Concept albums are difficult. But I think for this moment, for those couple minutes, I was like, okay, I see what you guys are doing there. But again, I think we both definitely agree that Foxy Brown, I mean, especially terrible. When you're considering terrible. How women have evolved in rap and really taken it over, it just felt, like you said, lazy to me. I mean, I don't think someone like Megan Thee Stallion or Saweetie or even Cardi B, who's known to not even write her raps, would have approached that track with a little more gusto. I can see that. I definitely see your point about Cormega and AZ kind of being stuck in time. It's kind of like if we wouldn't be able to have a Capone Noriega album right now if they're going to still talk about the same things that they talk about in the mid-90s. It just doesn't work that way. It sounds almost fake. So I get what you're saying there. I like the nostalgia portion of it. I wouldn't necessarily, like you said, go ahead and go buy a Cormega album right now based on that verse. And I think it was maybe an alley-oop from Nas. It's like, look, man, let me throw you a couple of streaming dollars your way and take care of you. You know, you never know. I mean, I'm just saying, sometimes when you have somebody like Nas who's able to put you on the map there, and it's his own label, Mass Appeal, it's a way to kind of just say, hey, man, let me throw something your way, you know what I'm saying? And because right now, like you said, nobody's clamoring for an AZ or Cormega release. So,
exactly.
I did want to touch up upon some things that Nas mentioned that was very interesting. I mean, Nasir, which was the album that came out before this in 2018 with the collaboration of Kanye West, was very highly anticipated and many felt was a bit of a disappointment, not only in length, but also in style and content. And, you know, Nas talked a little bit about it, and he said that he felt that the project was rushed. Nas didn't have a great relationship with Kanye in the studio, and he likes to take his time with these kinds of things. And one of the things that he mentioned was he didn't have enough time to really take on the music and kind of evolve with it. I mean, what was your take on his thoughts on that? He just didn't have enough time to work on those.
Yeah, I think it was the sign of the times then. I think Kanye was really all over the place. He was producing a number of projects at that time, which, you know, unfortunately, I think all of them kind of fell short. And I think that had a lot to do with it. You know, I don't think he understood what he had, you know, in his hands in terms of Nas. You know, Nas has always had great relationships with his producers. I mean, that's why he's had such great projects. You know, I was surprised that, for example, Illmatic, obviously, Illmatic was, you know, Nas was first album. He was young in the game, and he had an opportunity to work with the best producers in the game at that time, which was rare. You know, the best producers don't jump in with an artist who's unproven, but there was so much trust in Nas and his ability just based on what they had already seen of him just doing freestyles on the stage, that they went all in. So, you know, fast forward to today and this album, and, you know, he's working with, you know, a solo producer. And you can tell by the end product that they spent a lot of time on it, that he was invested in it. And I think that is the formula that has always worked for Nas. And that's probably why the project with Kanye, because Kanye didn't have that focus, that's probably why that project ended the way it ended.
Yeah, I wasn't sure, but I did feel that that project felt rushed, or it just didn't feel like Nas. Like, it didn't feel like it was his project. It was more like Kanye West producing this work and Nas happening to be on it. And I think that that took away from the project itself. I did like a couple of tracks from that album, or at least EP. I consider it an EP because it was so short. But even Nas said that he liked a couple of tracks specifically that he enjoyed on that. Cop Shot the Kid, which I really liked. He thought that that was a track that he could have done something with. Adam and Eve is another one. So Nas felt affinity to the project, but he just, like he said, he didn't get a chance to really stick with it and work with it. And that's why the album fell a little bit short. I also want to point out that in between Nasir and King's Disease, Nas released what was called the Lost Tapes, which is a bunch of collection of singles of, you know, throwaway tracks from other albums. And that was not well received as well.
Yeah, and we talked about that last time, yeah.
Yeah, those songs just didn't, you could tell they were kind of throwaways. There were a few decent ones in there, but, you know, those things didn't deserve the light of day, in my opinion. And they just didn't fit within the context of the time. But I do appreciate Nas at least pushing to release that content, because I'm sure it would have either gotten bootlegged or whatever. So might as well make some money out of it.
Yeah, and one interesting thing about this album release that I thought about, and I heard this conversation on Joe Budden's podcast. You know, they were talking about, you know, legacy artists like Nas, like Beyonce, like Jay-Z. You know, the normal formula for a release is, you know, you release a single ahead of an album to kind of promote it and get people excited about it. And then you release the album, you know, a month, 2 months later. You know, for artists like this, for legacy artists, I think they are in a position where they can just drop the album, right? And that's, they don't need all that pre-hoorah and hype. Their content enough when they drops suffices, and this is evident that that's true. You know, for, especially for a legacy artist like this, they're so good, they're so in tune with their talent and their repertoire and their delivery that they can put all eggs in one basket and drop it and it'd be successful. So, you know, kudos to Nas and his team for putting on a great project.
Yeah, that's an interesting point and something that I think artists are going to have to think about as they evolve within either their genre or their time in the industry. You know, I think a good example of that is kind of Lady Gaga. You know, she went from being an artist who's, you know, above and beyond, almost a legacy artist at this point, but still grappling with the idea of maybe I should put out some singles, maybe I should do this and that, or promote music a certain way. And she's kind of stuck in the middle there. So it's interesting because now you're looking at other artists who are a little bit younger or newer in the game. All they're doing is just putting out tracks, putting out music, just staying in the fray. And that'll keep them kind of in tune with what's going on in the streets. But then their album comes out and it's like 25 tracks of just the mishmash all over the place. So it's, you know, is that the new thing now? How do you decide what artist do you want to be? Do you just put out a bunch of singles and then figure out what to do with it? I think Cardi B's kind of stuck in that world right now. I mean, she put out one track and she says it's a single for her album. Who knows when that album's going to come out? So it makes things very interesting. And I think folks like Nas and like you said, Beyonce and the Jay-Z's and the Eminems of the world, not only don't they have to put out singles and could put out a whole album, but they can really truncate it and make it so that you need to listen to this whole set. In other words, instead of watching one episode of a show, we're throwing out the Netflix to you. We're giving you the whole season. Binge it, enjoy it,
right.
Do whatever you want. You know, instead of giving you one episode at a time where, you know, your mind is just going to wander off to the next big thing. So.
And look, and we get to talk about it, right? You know, if it was just a Nas single, maybe we'll spend 5 or 10 minutes on, but we're talking about an album, so he got the right formula.
Yeah, and he did put out a single. I mean, Ultra Black comes out a week before the album just to give people a taste of what that's going to look like, and maybe that's all you need these days, because once you put out the complete album, you're going to get your streams, you're going to get people talking about it, you get people chatting about it, but it also adds to listening to it over again. I mean, I find myself listening to more complete albums now because I want to see if I missed anything, or maybe just go back and check out a song that I might have not liked in the beginning, as opposed to, you know, well, we'll see how the single goes and then we'll wait 3 or 4 months and do the whole promo.
I do want to note that there is a difference between a single and a lead single off of an album. Those are two different things, right? So a single, if you're playing the singles game, then you're releasing a single, you know, every month, every 2 months, every 3 months. If you're releasing a lead single, then you're basically teasing the album. You're releasing that a week, 2 weeks before the album. So there is a big difference between those two types of singles.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point right there. And I think that we just haven't had so many lead singles in the past, you know, since the way the game has changed, that people have forgotten what that feels like. I think it's something that is just a little bit foreign. I mean, right now it's like, oh, the album's out. Okay. And then you just go ahead and binge the whole thing. So that's a very good point there. And sometimes singles are put out and we don't even know their lead singles. I mean, technically, we just don't get a feel for when projects are going to be released or how that looks like anymore. So yeah, that game has changed a little bit.
Well, if we were the source and we had to give, you know, between 1 to 5 mics for this album, how many mics would you give this album?
I'll give it 3.5. I think that the reason it doesn't get a 5 is because it's not perfect. You know, 5 is, that's the upper echelon of the best. And I don't give it a 4 because, like you said, there's a couple of tracks there that I will continuously skip. And usually you want a complete body from front to back. There's a few, I don't think we needed that extra track there. Was it Spicy or whatever? I would give it 3.5. I'm good with 3.5, and I think it's good.
Okay.
What would you do?
I would give it 3.75.
Just inching it closer to 4.
for the same reasons. For me, classic albums are albums where you don't have to skip tracks. Like you said, where there's perfection, not only in the music production, but the delivery, the lyricism, especially when it comes to hip hop or content when it comes to, you know, any other genre. So I think, like you said, because we had to skip one or two, for me, it was 2 tracks I had to skip. It's not Illmatic, right? To me, Illmatic is, you know, and to many, it's the part of the premier classic hip hop album of all time, one of the at the very least, and it wasn't that, but very close to it. But this is one of those albums where I've played it 3 or 4 times, just like, you know, specific Eminem albums, Nas's album, Jay-Z, Reasonable Doubt, things like that. For me, are just at that level.
Yeah, and I think, to be honest, in terms of 2020, which has been a year that's been very difficult to gauge and understand, this is top 5, in my opinion, best hip-hop album. So that being said, it is a very, very good album for this time right now. I think it's very good, worth listening to.
So go get it. It is called, go ahead and give the title of the album.
It's called King's Disease. It's out now, streaming everywhere. Go ahead.
So Tidal, Spotify, Apple Music, go get it. I don't know if, you know, folks still go buy CDs or if it's even available on CD. I don't know. But definitely available on all your streaming platforms. So go get it. Let us know what you think about it. Any favorites, any standouts, anything that you agree or disagree with us, please share in the comments. Let us know what you think, because we're definitely curious to see what our listeners think about the album, if you share the same views. Thank you for listening. Please make sure to like, to subscribe. Let us know what you think, and we will definitely catch you on the next one.
Thank you for tuning in to Musically Speaking with your hosts, Lewis and Pedro. Be sure to visit musicallyspeakingpodcast.com for show notes, past episodes, and our blog. Please subscribe, like, or share with a friend. Till next time.